welcome to the GlobalTQM.com podcast, where we teach e-commerce business owners how to source the best products from China, negotiate with Chinese manufacturers, navigate Chinese business culture, and grow your business to seven figures and beyond. David Hoffman is the founder and CEO of GlobalTQM.com, your team on the ground in China.
Hello, and welcome to Global Sources Live. My name's Tom, and I'll be your host for this episode of Buyer Fireside Chat. Before we get stuck into that, though, I should mention this is a sort of promotional tie-in with the upcoming Sourcing Festival, an online event on globalsources.com, which will offer a whole lot of great sourcing deals. And you can click the link in the description to register for access to that. Guest today is from Global TQM and here to talk about, well, you know, issues with logistics and getting things from one place to another, and that is David Hoffman. And let's see if we can bring him on now. Hi, David. How are you doing?
Good, Tom. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your time. Where are you calling us from, actually?
So I'm in Sydney, Australia, and it's about nearly 8 p.m. tonight.
Oh, right. Oh, you're working late for us. I appreciate yes. that. So thank you.
No problem at all. You're welcome.
All right. Fantastic. All right. So, I mean, well, before we get into the nitty-gritty of our discussion topic, could you tell us a bit about yourself maybe and about Global TQM? Give us a bit of a backgrounder on, you know, what you do.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, Tom, I live in Australia now. I lived in Hong Kong and China for 19 years before coming out here a year ago. We have a sourcing and quality control office in Shenzhen, and we've been developing products, sourcing suppliers for many years. That's what we do. And we help a lot of e-com sellers and a lot of small entrepreneurs of all sizes, including big retailers, you know, find reliable suppliers, develop products, source products, and handle the whole supply chain for them. And I guess really, you know, what's different about us is it's from all different sizes. If you're a small startup to, you know, a seasoned, experienced seller, you know, we've got a whole team on the ground in China that can help. And we really make sure that you have a direct relationship with the manufacturers. And we just help you build that and nurture that rather than try act as a middleman in between that.
That sounds pretty good. I mean, I suppose it makes sense to start with that, the upstream part of the e-commerce process, you know, finding manufacturers, finding the people who are going to provide the products that you then go on and sell. I mean,
yes.
If you are, I mean, especially if you're like a sole trader, someone who's maybe starting out and doesn't have, you know, huge amounts of capacity to like say, you know, you can't like fly out to go look at factories and so on. What are some kind of things you should bear in mind when you're starting out researching about potential suppliers? You know, what for example are some red flags you should watch out for in the sort of early days, so to speak?
So Tom, I think, you know, the typical way to go about it if you're not traveling would probably be online through, you know, all these websites like China, Global Sources, Alibaba, etc. I mean, there's a lot of access to suppliers. I think, you know, some red flags to look out for is, you know, suppliers aren't always what they appear to be. You know, you got to try and figure out who the real manufacturers are or who the trading companies are. Not that either are good or bad. I mean, both have their place, but you just really need to know who you're dealing with. And I just think some red flags probably to me are when they're too willing to do anything or they're quoting prices that are too cheap, it's often unrealistic. You know, so I would just say don't let price be the first judge of whether or not you want to pursue a supplier, number one. You know, and number two, really, you know, take the time to go deep to get to know the people and communicate with them. I think, you know, communication's key. And if you can't communicate well, that's really the first red flag. And, you know, and then, I mean, there's a whole ladder of things, you know, a checklist, you know, I kind of mentally go through in dealing with the supplier to establish, you know, their credibility.
Oh, yeah. What are some of the things on your checklist?
Okay. Yeah. So, firstly, capacity. I always like to understand, you know, what is their actual production capacity? You know, can they make our orders? And not just actually, you know, in that our orders might be so big, or somebody's order might be so big, can they handle it? It's sometimes, are they the right size manufacturer for you? If you're starting and your quantities are smaller, you don't necessarily want to be working with the big manufacturers because they probably won't give you the attention you need. So it's really it's finding the fit for where you're at. I think that's really important.
Yeah, you want to be one of the bigger customers they have, right? Like not just
Exactly. Or at least be of a size that they're willing to take your order and don't find it, you know, more of an annoyance than anything else, because you'll just get pushed down the line and you won't get the attention.
Sure. I mean, go ahead. I feel like you had another startup you've had to launch into.
There's a lot, you know, so I do think whether it's large or small, you want to understand the size and capability of that manufacturer. You know, communication is always a top of my list. And the things I'm looking for there are the skills, not just their ability to speak English or converse, but it's really what are their skills? You know, are they educating me about a product, about the production process, you know, and are they knowledgeable? Because if they're not, there's a good chance they're either not the manufacturer or possibly just a low quality manufacturer. You know, you almost want that communication to be so fluid that they can talk you through their quality, which is the next major thing to understand. And that is, how do they check their quality? What processes do they have in place? What is their philosophy as a company on quality? What are their expected return rates? How do they deal with market feedback? You know, all those questions will help you build confidence in the company. Obviously you get things like certifications. Are they experienced in your country? Do they have the certifications you need on your product? That's important. It's not uncommon for a manufacturer to say, yeah, we can make it for Australia, for example. But if they haven't actually shipped to Australia, it's more of a willingness to do it than actually understanding things that might not even know. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not to say that, you know, just because someone is making something for Australia for the first time, that's a bad thing in itself. But you need to know that in advance, that you can't assume that they have everything under control when it comes to their shipping. Maybe you need to kind of help them out with some things. And yeah, I guess you might be, you could well be willing to do that bit of helping out. But yeah, you're right. And I guess there's that issue of, so I suppose being a little bit vulnerable, is that a part of it? Like when they could admit things they don't know about,
That's a really good way to put it. It's vulnerable and honest. If they don't know something, to say that, it's far more important, because ultimately, and I see this so often where a buyer will expect the factory to be responsible for everything, which of course isn't an ideal world. We'd all love that, but it does ultimately come down to you as the buyer, because you're going to suffer the losses. You're going to suffer the reputation loss. So it's really important that you take that ownership, and, you know, having a supplier that's trustworthy and honest and transparent with those things really makes a big difference. And you giving them that comfort to do that, by the way, because I think if you create a tone where they're too scared to tell you, oh, we don't have this or we don't have that, or we need to get it still, there's going to be a delay. You start getting funny stories, and you'd rather have honesty from the beginning.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, you don't want them to be kind of doing that thing. I mean, yeah, you do hear those stories where, because a supplier is trying to kind of solve the problem before they have to tell them about it, the buyer about it, then they end up kind of leaving it to really the last minute when it's too late to kind of even mitigate the issue of like a missed order or shipment or something.
Exactly. And that's when you really get into that, you know, the real risk territory of them doing something, to taking shortcuts, or, you know, doing something you might not be aware of. So it's much better to set the tone, you know, such that they understand. You'd rather work through problems with them and solve it together. But it's critical that, you know, you validate everything along the way.
Yeah, because those problems that you don't know about, they're going to have downstream effects for you. You know, once you are, you know, you're shipping things out of the warehouse in, wait, now I need to think of some Australian cities, in Newcastle to, yes. To, you know, some shops around the New South Wales area. There you go. That's some Aussie geography.
You did well.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, you're blissfully assuming that those boxes are full of products that are fine, but then the customers get them and they're going to be pretty upset, which I suppose actually, especially for e-commerce buyers, that's another thing to think about, you know, this, the kind of the fulfillment from the point of purchase out to the customers, whether they're, you know, retailers or individuals. I mean, what do you find as some sort of pitfalls for e-commerce, you know, sellers in particular? Like, there are kind of traps that would be easy to avoid if you knew about them that happen a lot.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the e-commerce fulfillment side, I think people sometimes underestimate the experience the customer has when they receive a product. You know, and that's, for example, you know, simple things like the packaging and the whole unboxing experience. You know, that's your first impression. And I know personally, when I buy stuff online, when it comes really poorly packaged, the first thing I think is, oh, this is cheap Chinese product. Where did they buy this from? Is it even good? When it comes really nicely packaged, you know, with little customized message cards or just a bit of thought behind it, I naturally feel like, oh, these guys care about what they do because they even care about the packaging. And when I receive it and it's nice and I enjoy unboxing it, I'm already biased towards liking the product and wanting to enjoy the product. One of the things I find as well that's really important is that's often overlooked is unboxing the product is actually your first opportunity to communicate directly with the customer. And that's really a powerful point, a powerful moment, because if there's anything you want them to know, for example, hey, if you've got any problem at all with this product, call us or live chat with us or whatever, we will solve it within 12 hours, for example. That's great to know, because already you're starting off on the right foot. Whereas I've seen products you arrive in, there's a long-winded instruction manual, and that message is there somewhere embedded in the instruction manual. And you go, well, you know, probably 2% of people read that. Whereas one simple, clear message will completely transform your relationship, and it'll bring down your returns, you know, and give that customer service that people want. So, you know, that customization, that messaging is really critical. One of the other things that I just mentioned is, and I've personally been through this experience when I shop online, is, you know, partnering with the right logistics partners is crucial. I actually bought something from the US. I was so excited to get this product. As it turns out, the product is phenomenal, but it took me nearly 2 months to get it because it was routed all over the place. And, you know, the company was good. They were helpful, but they admitted there's nothing they can do. It's gone out. They've got a tracking number. The problem was the logistics company they were using were looking for the cheapest rate and routing it all over. Whereas if they just paid a bit more or had a better partner, you know, that nearly turned me off. I actually demanded a refund, to be honest, after a month, even though I hadn't got the product. And they didn't do it, but I could understand why, but it was frustrating. It put me off.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because like you say, there's even something as simple as the little card inside a box. I mean, it's a cost-effective way to win over the customer, isn't it? You feel it does work. It's so simple, but it absolutely works. And then, yeah, that a 2 month delay, that's the opposite. You already resent it by the time it arrives.
So exactly.
It's a lot of work to get over. I mean, what are some ways you can avoid, what's a red flag for a logistics agency? Is it a too good to be true price? Is that kind of a red flag?
Yeah, I think it's experience, being able to quote definite delivery times and lead times, you know, when the ranges are too wide, it's generally not a good thing. I think if they've got too many partnerships, you know, sometimes that happens, especially if it's global shipping. You'll find sometimes they go, oh, well, we use this service for this country, this service for another country. If there's too many links in the chain, it's probably a red flag. Or if they can't give you rates straight away, it's definitely a red flag, because you'll find they're probably not shipping regularly to those countries. So I would, you know, it's just like, look for the guys that are doing the volumes in those places, because they've got the infrastructure. And even if they're a little bit more expensive, I would go with that safety any day.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like it's pretty negative for the. Is there any kind of pro to using the smaller kind of delivery agency, or you think not really? You should kind of go with the bigger ones whenever you can.
Yeah, I think it's normally price. You go for the smaller guys, and that's where they try to compete. I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I just think reputation and experience is more important. You know, you may be try a new delivery service with some orders, but not all orders. And, you know, as they prove themselves, or if they've got clients they use that you can talk to and try and verify things, that might be helpful. But of course, tracking information as well. You know, you want to be able to track it. I know that costs more usually, yeah. But it really does make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a customer service thing as well. I mean, I know when I order stuff that's online, I start to get, I don't know if it's really a negative perception, but it's certainly, I'm kind of in limbo until it arrives, when it sometimes the package goes into a tracking black hole. You know, it gets to California, yeah. And then it gets on a plane and it says, well, now we don't know. And you think,
And if you think about it, you know, you own your whole customer experience, from when they're shopping, to the descriptions they're seeing, to the product images, to your accuracy of inventory, that you can buy it and get it and get it delivered on time, and even when they receive the product off sale. So you own everything. But in that whole customer journey, there's this third-party weak link that nobody says, oh, well, that wasn't your problem. That was your logistics company's problem. They just go, you guys are terrible on delivery, right? It's like this little weak link in that whole customer experience that can just, you know, really hurt and damage your reputation.
Yeah, you gotta watch for that. Well, I tell you, let's bring this back to a happier kind of topic. I want to come back and kind of talk about customized packaging a bit and making people feel good and not bad. Is that something that is you typically find that suppliers will kind of arrange as part of a customized order, or is it more practical to go to like a specialist kind of packaging provider and get them to kind of hook up with your supplier?
No, I think supply, look, it depends. You know, if you're doing a bulk order out of China, you know, you can definitely include, you know, message cards in there that are a little bit more generic, maybe not addressed to the person, for example. But you can definitely make sure that all the boxing and packaging materials are done at the manufacturing level, for sure. So you've got less handling later. But if you want to really customize something, it's probably got to be done at, you know, at your pick and pack center, where you might be handwriting a card, or you might be even printing a personalized card with each order, and they, you know, inserting it with the bundle. It's just you just got to look at it. Or if it's a very customized product you're printing on, that's normally, you know, a secondary process, right, which is done in your local country at the logistics center.
The principle of like, do it as early on in the process as you can, but not too early,
exactly, because remember, you've got volume and bulk versus personalized something one-on-one. They're quite different. Unless you're lucky enough to have a supplier in China that's drop shipping for you and can do that personalization, you know, but normally you need a little bit more scale for that.
Yeah, I could imagine that's the point at which you definitely need to be among the top clients for that supplier, isn't it, to get that kind of attention.
Absolutely. You probably got to put one of your own people there to manage that.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting interesting thought, although I think perhaps outside the scope of this discussion. Anyway, so David, yeah, top tips as ever. Thank you for that. If people want to get in touch with you or Global TQM, how do they do that?
Yeah, really easy. Just go to globaltqm.com, and on our website there's a schedule a discovery call, and that's free, and they can talk to me or my team, and you know, we can discuss their scenario. We love to talk to people.
All right, fantastic. Well, David, thank you very much for your time. It's been lovely chatting to you, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Likewise, Tom. Thank you so much.
All right, cheers. Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the GlobalTQM.com podcast. So you don't miss a single episode, remember to subscribe to our show on iTunes. We'd also be very grateful if you'd leave us an honest rating and review. And don't forget to download your free gift, our ebook on China sourcing for startups, at globaltqm.com/gift.